start, I want to thank all of you for being here. I'm not used to teaching from a wheelchair, but I fell on Tuesday, so didn't think I was going to get to do this, but Julie made sure I had a wheelchair so she wouldn't have to do this by herself.
I didn't want to do this alone.
So she worked it out. But I'm Diane Cope, and I've taught sixth grade girls, middle school girls, for 27 years. And I have a teaching degree now, but I didn't when I started teaching them. And taught school for 15 years, second grade, and ran the gifted program. And taught third grade in there some of that time. And I've retired now to be with Mike and to do our thing together. And out of those 27 years, I've probably only had about six teachers that have taught with me. Julie's taught the last 6 years, and I'll let her introduce herself in just a minute. But before she does, I have some old sixth grade girls here who are now adults. It's so weird, but Mary Margaret, raise your hand, Mary Margaret, and Carissa and Elizabeth. Did I have you, Elizabeth? Okay, I can remember, our families go back so many years, and I thought,
I'm sure I would have remembered.
I don't really remember. That makes me feel even better.
We would have remembered.
So I don't know if that's when you guys moved or how that worked or what.
No worries.
Oh, that's what it was. Because I felt bad that I couldn't remember either. So good. But it's great when you see your kids that have grown up into these amazing people. And today is more practical, not deep spiritual, like lessons and curses, like this major biblical scholar.
Yes, you are.
And so, but we're going to give you some practical stuff. Anyway, Julie Danley, go ahead and tell about you a little bit,
too. I'm Julie Danley. I work at ACU in the nursing school. I'm their retention specialist. I do, like, tutoring and remediation and lots of counseling when nursing school gets hard. I'm a nurse. I worked in the ACU clinic for a long time, and I also did labor and delivery for a long time. I'm now a huddle leader at Highland. We have our huddle is now, they're now juniors. We walk with them from freshmen to seniors, and so they're now juniors. And we're kind of sad because they're thinking they're almost seniors. But that's kind of how every year at the end of sixth grade girls, I would say to Diane, I don't want these girls to go. And she would say, there's going to be another group. It's going to be okay. but I always didn't want to let go of them. I have four children. They like kind of live all over the country. And I just loved sixth grade girls. It was very fun. I guess we did it together for, did we decide, like,
it's about 6 years.
Yeah.
I don't know
either. Okay. The girls that were my very first sixth grade girls class with Diane are now going to be seniors this next year at ACU. So I still get to see a lot of them, which is very fun.
Yeah, it's fun. And some of them, even though our families are connected with this group here, but I still have some in Yeshivas too that we're still connected with that are adults that for whatever reason you connected and they needed you for some mentoring. We're still connected. They're like my daughters, and I know you feel the same way. And really, we got blessed way more than we blessed them. And every time we would go into that classroom, especially if I taught all day, I think I'm too tired to do this, and always would walk out going, why did I think that? You know, because they blessed me back in so many ways.
Well, I think we should, before we even start, we should say that we had a plan, and we were pretty organized, but there were Wednesdays that we would call each other and say, do you have class this week or do I? And then one of us would just wing it. So
honest.
So it wasn't always perfect, but it was awesome. So.
This is just something I ran across just recently. I don't do Facebook. I'm just starting it a little bit, but I did run across this on Facebook. And it's a lady that's a children's minister, and her little paragraph here, it's not what the whole thing is about, but it's why she does what she does. And I thought, you guys are here for whatever reason, whether it's you're going to have kids in middle school or you have that same love for those, that age group, or children in general, whatever age they are, you'll understand this. And I thought, this is why we do what we do. She says, my work is to talk to children about how wild and wonderful are their worlds, their God and other people, and how fiercely and forever and unconditionally loved they are. I teach them about grace, how grace means that they can relax because there is nothing they can do to make God love them more and nothing they can do to make God love them less. I teach them that the world will try to convince them otherwise. But the truth is that all they really have to do their whole lives long is bask in the light of God's love and then reflect it onto others. I do this work because everyone should figure out what she believes or he to be the most important work in the world and just go do it. I mean, that is why we do what we do. And I just love that. So what I would say that we've done in the last years, really for 27 years, I did not change the format. You need a roadmap. And my roadmap was, these girls need to know the two greatest commandments. Because if you live out the two greatest commandments, then you're going to do exactly what you need to do. To love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And to love your neighbor as yourself. And that was the guiding principle as to anything that we ever did. But you have to have a roadmap. You can't just pick up a curriculum and go, this looks good, and go with that. You really need to know kind of where you're going. Then you can take that and formulate that into the path you want it to take. So that really was, in my mind, all along, what needed to happen. Go to the first slide. The most important part, I felt like, once you get your roadmap, is you need to have a structure for your classroom. And so the structure that has not changed in 27 years is that we had prayer time and we had our Bible class time. Sometimes prayer time took more time than the Bible class time. And we'll explain that in a little more detail later. Sometimes Bible class took a little bit longer. It just depended on what was happening at the moment, and you kind of have to go with your gut on that. But we always needed to come together to pray. And so, to make prayer real, to make them understand how much God loves them and how they can love him back in all parts of their body, is to have prayer with him. And so we always had a giant bulletin board. I liked it to take up the whole wall if it could. And it would be blank in the beginning of the year. And then we would write our answered prayers on there. That was a powerful visual to help us see how God worked in our lives. Now, our prayers sometimes are very personal. So we would put answered prayers in code, so that if anybody walked in the classroom, they didn't really know what that was, but we did. And they would initial it and write that little date on there. So by the end of the year, it was amazing that that board was full. And it just was, I was always surprised. I'm still surprised. 58, I'm still surprised when I see the way God has worked in my life. But that was a powerful thing for us to have in a visual. It was very important for them to have a prayer journal. Carissa, didn't you just say you just found yours? So I love that she still had that in her things. That was a powerful thing because it gave them another way to remember the prayer request that we had. I've always taught on Wednesday nights. I like Wednesday nights better. For me, though, they've been in school all day. They're tired. So for them to be writing the prayer request down was a good way for them to focus on it and also remember it. And so we would write down the request, and then they would have to pray for them all week long. We had to put it down to one prayer request and one answered prayer because we would have been there every time, always praying. Why don't you tell the part here, and then we'll explain why that was.
Yeah,
she's the story lady.
Yeah.
Because
I call her my straight man here, and I used to tell the stories.
She tells all the details and remembers them. She's a great storyteller.
Well, like she said, sometimes the kids would pray for stuff like help us beat the rival high school, or like those kind of things. But sometimes it was really serious. Like parents were going through divorces, or they had a relative who was dealing with depression. They were seeing that every day. And the one story I have to tell you, and I feel like we can't totally take this class, our sixth grade girls class doesn't take credit for this. It's partially that these girls grew up in an awesome children's mm-hmm. ministry, and they learned about prayer. We had one girl in our class who, they were very poor, she had a single mom. They had three little girls. She was the oldest. And their mom was very sick. And we all really thought that the mom was going to die. But we hadn't mentioned it to the little girl in our class at all. And one day we were sitting in the classroom and we were doing some artwork. And we were all over the floor, just all laying all over the floor working on stuff. And she just stopped and said, "Would you all pray for my mom? I think she's going to die. And I don't know what that's going to mean for all of us." Well, Diane and I didn't do anything. The girls all gathered around Olivia and laid their hands on her. And they just started praying. I mean, like, one sentence here and one sentence there, and they just kept going. And Diane and I just, like, gathered around them with our arms, and we were just sobbing. But the girls, it was like they got it. They understood what prayer was, and that was very, very moving. That's a story I'll never forget, and I'll never forget the visual from that, of the girls just stopping what they were doing, and they just, like, ran over to her and laid their hands on her. So.
Yeah, and even just the divorces and that several families were going through, and they would bring that up. We talked about in class how important it was that what we said in class stayed in class. It's middle school, so did they mess up sometimes? Yes, they did. But it did mostly stay there, and it brought them together in a way I don't know how to explain, and it brought us together with them in a way I don't know how to explain.
I have to tell them one more story. This is a funny story. I mean, it starts sad, but it's very funny. We had a little girl come to our class for the very first time, and we always circled up for prayer time, and one girl would say the prayer. After we did all the prayer requests, one girl would pray for everyone in the classroom. And we'd never seen this little girl before, and when it got to her, her prayer request was that her mom had just passed away. Like, this was, like, a few days before, like, the week before. And she wanted us to pray for that. But then she said she wanted to say the prayer for all of us, you know. And we were like, well, Diane had said, wait till next week. Like, see us do it one time, and then next week you can lead the prayer. And she was like, no, I really want to do it. So how do you say no? So, okay, go ahead. And so one of the other teachers with us had said she wanted her to pray for, she was going on a retreat to Virginia. And so this little girl said, she said the whole prayer, and she got to Candy's request, and she said, and please be with Candy when she goes to vagina. So all of us are shaking, like we're laughing so hard. And all of the girls still remember that. Like when I see that group, that sixth grade girls group, they go, remember when Tiara prayed? Yes, I do remember. So crazy things happen with sixth grade girls.
And that was one of many times that she did something.
Yes, yes, that was just the one I really remember.
She was... I thought, well, we've kind of said this, but I thought sometimes I think it helps to see it why prayer time was so important for the girls. We felt like it helped the girls focus and come into a quieter frame of mind because they had been so busy with school and activities, and it just sort of settles it down to really get serious. It doesn't always work, but for most of the time. It gave them an outlet to be able to talk with each other after being in school all day. I didn't want them to come to class and have to be quiet. That's not what they needed, especially at that age group anyway. And then if you've been in school all day, you need to be providing opportunities constantly where we're not doing the talking. Mostly they are. And prayer time allowed for that. And a great way for them to connect with each other and with us. A way for them to know how much we love them and that we could be there for them was through that prayer time. And then it helped them see God in their lives through answered prayers. And then it helped them see the world around them, to see the big picture. And that came through lots of different prayer requests from whatever was going on in their lives or our lives. We were very honest with our own lives and what we were dealing with. We always had a request too. I felt like that was very important, that we were among them and not over here on the sidelines. We were a part of that group. So we always have our prayer time, and then we have our Bible story time. The Bible lessons have changed through the years, but again, anything that we use, I tried to make sure we were focusing on the roadmap, so using the two greatest commandments. I did a Beth Moore study on Jesus, the one and only. That was powerful for me. And I loved it so much, I wanted the girls to experience it. And I found out they had a children's version of that. So our church ordered the children's version. It was really elementary, too much so for sixth grade. So we just all hunkered down together and took the adult version and the child's version, and we wrote curriculum for the girls. And we pulled some things from the adults. We pulled some things from the children's. As a teacher, one of the things I've taught all ages, even up to college, and they're all the same. They're just bigger bodies. They like to do a lot of the same things even. Just bigger bodies. And they still struggle with a lot of the same things in just different formats. And so we could use that. I'm not saying that's what you should do, but I am saying take a curriculum and then guide it with what your roadmap is and what who your girls are, or boys, or whatever you're going to be doing, to make it fit them, because that's really important. Don't just assume that because that's what that lesson says, that's what you should do. Give yourself freedom and feel good about it. I just read a book that I really like, Children's Ministry That Fits, by David Sisnes, I think that's how you say it. How to understand God in spiritual ways, and that children and really adults experience God in these ways. I read that as myself. I can see myself going in and out of that. As a child, I was not so much a word person, and yet I grew up in the Church of Christ, where that's what you had to do, was like memorize scriptures and all that. That freaked me out because I was afraid I wouldn't know the words. But I was more emotional, music, those kind of things. Symbol is like more high church kind of experiences, and with your crosses and things. Action is more like social justice, getting out there and being God to others. And I think you need to incorporate all of those things. Learning styles, different kids learn in lots of different ways. Those all need to be experienced in the Bible classroom too, because they're going to learn best when it fits their style. They're going to connect with God when it's more their style. But you've got to incorporate all of that so you connect with each child in different ways. And then it's got to apply to their lives. If that lesson you're doing doesn't apply to their lives and you're just telling a Bible story, it just sort of hangs there and it never goes anywhere else. If that lesson doesn't do that for you, figure out a way to make that connect to their lives, because that's got to happen. We have used all kinds of things. She's going to tell you some of the funny things we've even done. I mean, art, poetry. She's good at taking scriptures and making them do crazy things with those things. When I taught lessons that I thought were deep, I still played games with them to make my point. They need to be moving around, interacting. So we had our prayer time when we were talking, but then when we were doing the lesson, we might start out with a game that sometimes connected really well, sometimes not quite so much, but I could make it work just to get them active, moving, and then focus, make my point. We'd play hangman to make a point, like we did misconceptions of God, and whatever that misconception was, we would do hangman to figure out what the misconception was. Then we could have a good little 5-minute to 8-minute discussion on what that really means and how does that apply to how they see God. Just to make it fun. Go ahead and tell some of
when we did Jesus Calms the Storm, we did crazy stuff, like we made the storm, like we made it start raining softly, and then it would get louder and louder, and then we would wiggle a poster board and make it be loud, and we'd do thunder. I mean, like, we did the whole thing. But then when we finished that lesson, they all had a big piece of paper, and I asked them to write out on their paper the storms in their lives. And they didn't have to share it if they didn't want to, but they could if they wanted. And I said, you can use words, you can draw pictures, you can just do a color, you can do whatever. Well, some big things came out of those posters. Some of them, their parents were going through a divorce, or their dad was an alcoholic, and they would draw that in their picture. And a lot of those they wouldn't share. The girls would usually share the stuff that wasn't as big, but the ones who did that would kind of take their picture home with them. You know, it kind of, I always wondered what they did with them from there, but I never knew. And also we would illustrate the parts of Jesus' birth. Like, each girl would get a verse and they had to draw a picture for it. And to let you know that we have lots of kids in our class that don't fit the mold. And we had one little girl who is autistic who was in our class, and she was awesome. And she, when we drew the pictures of Jesus' birth, she had something simple like, draw baby Jesus. I don't remember what it was. And she kept looking at me with this kind of mischievous look on her face. And when we were done, we were getting ready to, we put them up, and then we tell the story as we put the pictures up. And she had drawn a turkey. So it was like, okay. But we had so many sweet stories from having her as a part of our class. And I think it was important for her to be a part of our class. Like,
and to put the turkey up on the
and
wall.
And to put the turkey up on the wall. That was baby Jesus. But like, there are many times, like one day when I came into class, Madeline was there and she was right in front of me, and she likes to talk really close. And she got up right next to me and she said, Diane is cool. And I said, she is cool. And she said, you are not cool. And I said, that's okay. I gave up trying to be cool a long time ago. And she said, but you are cute and funny. And then she just walked away. So it's kind of, but even like we were in the middle of a serious discussion one time. She was sitting across from me. There were three of us. We're all there. And I wear my hair in braids a lot. And I had my hair in braids that night. Probably had on sweats or something. And she looked across at me in the middle of the serious discussion. And she said, you look like Heidi. We're like, thanks, Mally. Let's go. We just kept going. And then we would also like chalk the sidewalks around the church building and do post-it notes. Like, we called it guerrilla artwork. And we would, they would write positive things or scripture on all the sidewalks entering the building so that people could read them as they came in. Or they would do little post-it notes and put them everywhere, inside the auditorium, all over, everywhere, in the bathrooms. And at the time, Gina Lewis worked for Highland, and she went into the bathroom stall, sat down, closed the door, and there's a little post-it note there that said, God is always with you. So I just kind of felt like it was fun that the girls had this impact on the whole church. You know, like it was, Highland's a big place, but like they were feeling little parts of the girls as they walked in or like in the bathroom stall or whatever. Guerrilla artwork. And then the baptism. Oh, I'm going to let you start that.
Well, yeah. We talked about Jesus' baptism. One of the things we did is we took this curriculum on Jesus' life, and we took half of it for 6th grade girls, half of it for 7th grade girls, and then sometimes we would combine classes so that by the time they got through 6th and 7th grade, they weren't with us. They were with two other teachers for 7th grade most of the time. They had gone through all of Jesus' life. But we had the baptism story. And Julie taught that lesson, and I wanted to tell you the part from my perspective, how amazing that was, and then I want her to do it for you, because I can't really talk about it. It's powerful. But we took these girls, and in the auditorium, the adult classes were happening, so we'd have our little kind of mini prayer time first, and then we'd have our little whatever you did in the beginning of the class, I can't remember, and then we had to like quietly... The baptistry was in front of the auditorium, so we had to quietly get these girls up into the steps while the class was going on.
That was the hardest part.
And then wait for church to be over so that she could do this little part with them. So all the girls are quietly giggling because we're doing something wrong by going up there while they're all having a lesson down there, and they loved that. And pulling up their pant legs, and we tried to tell them, don't get too wet, but you know, they did. But that was part of the experience. And we all gathered down the steps that would go into the baptistry, so we all were in the water to some degree, just not all the way in. And then Julie was in the midst of us. And then she would tell the story. Yes.
Now, I'm going to tell you what I did in the beginning, before we went up there. I'd ask them, what does water mean to you? What are the things that water does? You know, like, it hydrates you, it cleanses you, it keeps us alive. Our bodies are, you know, there's a lot of water in our bodies. I mean, all of those kind of things. And then I would read this little quote from Marilyn Robinson. I think it's from Gilead or Home. It's one of those. About... two little boys playing in the sprinkler. And the sprinkler he talks about how sprinklers and rainstorms where the sun is shining are some of the only moments when water meets light. And he talks about how beautiful that is. And then what we would do, we'd go up there. Well, I would say, how's baptism, how water meets light? And we would go up there, and I would get them in the water, and then I would tell them the story of my son's baptism. My son had just graduated from high school, was getting ready to go to Lipscomb as a freshman, and he came into the living room where my husband and I were, and he said, "Can I talk to you guys?" And I thought, you're always like in the back of your mind, like, "What's wrong? Like, what happened?" And he said, "I want to be baptized today." And so my husband and I sat down with him, we prayed, and I said, "Okay, here's my hope for you. Is that when all your life I've told you to be cautious, I've told you to be careful, I've told you to weigh things, you know, but I'm telling you in this situation to jump in over your head, to overwhelm yourself with this." And so that's what I told the girls. And then I would have them close their eyes, and I would sing over them. And this is funny because I can't remember the song. I had to call Tammy's husband, Gary, this morning and make him sing it to me on the phone. Because I haven't sung it in so long. But I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. Pretend you're standing in the waters of baptism, and I'm going to sing the part that I remember. Open your eyes again. I'm going to tell you another story. Here's the reason why this song meant something to me. I forgot this whole part of it. That our friend, Mark Moore, had taught us a song at camp that summer. And my friend was going through a divorce, and we were at the beach together for a week. And I had walked down the beach and was standing out on the jetty and was watching the water and watching how water, when you're at the ocean, how it covers all of the wounds in the sands. Like any footprints, any markings are just continually smoothed over, over and over and over again. And how the rocks that I'm standing on are shaped by the water. And I just started singing that song to myself, "Let Your Living Water Flow Over My Soul." And as I was walking down the beach, I saw my kids and my friend's kids playing out in the water, and that was living water. And then I saw the same son I was just telling the story about, talking with this little friend who was like 7, my friend's daughter, and they're just sitting on the blanket having a conversation. And I look out at the next jetty, and my friend is sitting on the rocks talking to her son, who's having a hard time with the divorce that she's going through. And I'm thinking, that's living water. Like, God's living water and our baptisms wash over us continually. They change us, they transform us, and they clean us over and over and over again. And so then I would tell the girls, "Close your eyes." So you're going to close your eyes. And then I would sing the song. "Let your living water flow over my soul. Let your Holy Spirit come and make me whole." I forget how it goes. Well, you get the idea. That was the song. I can't remember the next line. I need Gary. But anyway, that's what we would do. But it was very moving, and it was kind of cool to hear the girls' reactions from that afterwards and how they all remember it.
Them in that water, yeah. And her singing over that.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm back in that water the minute I hear your voice singing that song. It's so powerful. Those times with the girls are really forming. They form you. They form them into a much, much spiritual walk, I think. For the next slide. The other things we did that I think are really important, 1 hour a week is not very much. And if you really want to mentor and be a part of their lives, you've got to do more than that. So we had extra events and things that we did throughout the year. Plus, if you do the same thing all year long, that's also boring, and that just won't hold their attention either. But every year in the beginning, we always had a swimmer party. That was the big, giant kickoff. Because we had these new girls coming in, and we wanted to have a whole night with them. I mean, you know them by the end of that night. You spent the whole night practically up. So we felt like we'd start that year out with already a relationship going. We included the 7th grade girls in. Once I started in Abilene, the girls were all mixed together, and the youth minister wanted to keep it that way. And I said, they were like really girls. I mean, we can't mention them the way we need to with them always meeting together. But if we took 6th grade separate, 7th grade separate, we can really get to know those girls. And then I understand you wanting them to know each other, so let's just do some events together that help build that relationship, because they're going to be, they need each other to get through middle school and high school. So we did the slumber party together. And that was a way we all did this, tried to help the 7th grade girls take on the responsibility of, you're the older ones. So you need to mentor these 6th graders that are coming in. This is your job for this year. You remember how you felt. You were afraid. You didn't know what middle school was going to be like. they know, you know now, so you get in there and your night is going to be there to get one of those sixth grade girls. And we gave them that commission, and then the next year those sixth grade girls became the seventh grade girls, and we commissioned them to do the same thing. And so we were trying to build that relationship for them. That night helped us know the girls and them to know us better. This is what I think is really important. It needs to be a scheduled event. I've been to a lot of youth functions, and it's free for all because they think, well, they're together, and that's great. I see a lot of time wasted on building friendship. The friendships are not being built. They go to, we all do this. We tend to gravitate towards the people we know, and we don't let anybody else in, and then you've wasted time. And some people go away hurt because they were not a part of the group. So if you'll go to the next slide. Just to give you kind of an idea of what we did, I still had some people who felt like they needed some downtime, so I eventually added the swimming time in the beginning. And so the swimming and the eating was kind of our downtime where they could kind of mingle around and do some things. But then after we ate, we pulled them together, and we would divide the kids up into groups of four or five, depending on how many you have. Typically for us, it would be about four or five groups of about five in each group. And because we combined seventh grade, we had four teachers, sometimes some former sixth grade girls that were college students would come back and help me on the slumber party night. And they would be a part of that group too. And so we would not let them pick their group. We either prayed over that and we divided them just randomly, or like we would put numbers out there and they had to draw a number and that was their group. And there was no switching numbers, none of that. That was your group. And we did silly things like we played spoons and taboo and gestures and I don't remember.
Yeah.
But it was like those kind of little group things. Every 20 minutes, we rotated them. So that took a while. But that meant that each one of us was part of that one of those games, and we were with four or five girls for 20 minutes. And so we were getting to know them better, and they were getting to know each other better. And so it was great. After that, we pulled them all together as a whole group, and we played some fun games then. Do you remember some of those?
Some of them were hysterical, but I can't even think of what they are.
Catchphrase was one. We did some kind of... That was not my thing, so that was the seventh grade teacher's thing. We all have our gifts, and I told her, that is your gift, that is not mine, so you get to be in charge of it. But anything that required the whole group to work together, we didn't do it long, probably 15 minutes, maybe 20. And then we got everybody ready for bed, and we laid out our sleeping bags. I had a kind of a bigger living room, so I took all the furniture, pushed it against the wall, because we are all going to be in that same room. We are not taking like three or four people in one bedroom and three or four people in another bedroom, because again, those little clicks all happen. And so I didn't care how bad or uncomfortable it was, we were going to do that. And so we did, and it always worked. And then I wanted us to kind of end with a devotional time. Again, I wanted that to be the kickoff for the year, so we tried to make that devotional time something that would help guide them as to, this is what our year is going to look like. Here's the road we're going down. And it doesn't have to be long. Different years, some teachers did it. We took turns on that, just depending on who felt like that was what they wanted to do that year. Then, we said that you could stay up all night if you wanted to, but all you could do was stay in that room, and we were going to watch movies. You were allowed to get up to go to the bathroom, but you were not going to get up out of that room for any other reason. Because, again, I didn't want any little clicks going here and there. I'd rent five movies that were okay for them to watch. Typically, after about the first one, most were asleep. Yeah. About five that were always awake. Every year, there was about two or three sixth graders that said, I'm going to be up all night. And they would be. And Julie and I would stay up.
All night.
We were the only two teachers that stay up. My daughter-in-law helped. She was a lot younger than me, and she could not stay up. And I was like, really, Jenna? You know, you can do that. But she was tired. And I teased her about that for a long time. But I felt like one of us needed to be up. One time, it was the death of Princess Diana, and the funeral was on, and we all watched that all night long together and didn't watch any movies. And it was a bonding time with those girls. They really cared about that. But I just felt like it was important that things were planned for the specific purpose of really getting to know each other. So we did that. Go ahead. I'm going to try to go faster because we're running out of time. We also did some things with the seventh grade girls throughout that had to do with the holidays. This has a lot to do, I didn't know this at the time, but Holly Allen has written a book on intergenerational churches. I think I knew deep down that was important, but I didn't realize what I was doing. But this is part of what she's talking about. Because I had them 6th and 7th grade together on these times, we picked one year where we used the widow and the widowers. And so that was the intergenerational part I'm talking about. They got to get to know the men and women. We could have done a whole lot more, but because I was working full-time, I didn't have the time to pull that together. But we made cards for every holiday. When it was Valentine's, we talked about how hard that would be for them because they lost their partner. And we put up scriptures, and we just made that a time. Sometimes we made them things to go along with the cards. Sweet, sweet things happened.
Yeah, well, some of the students formed relationships with the people they wrote letters to, and they still write to each other. So it kind of developed a really sweet thing that they... And some of those kids didn't know who those older people were.
No,
but
know.
Then once we did that, then they started finding out who they were. And so
and we
had,
like,
cool.
3 pages of, because Highland was kind of big, of widow and widowers that they could pick, you know, and they'd be like, oh, I want Catherine Witherspoon because I had her last time and she went with the sweetest note. And so I'd be, that's fine. So then she'd take that name, you know, and they would probably do about 4 or 5 names
yeah.
a night. And then the other year we did children and families from the house that Carrie built. We had a daughter that was medically fragile and mentally challenged, but the house that Carrie built was for families with children with medical challenges and severe ones. And I had gotten really good friends with the mom and Carrie, and Megan's picture is still up in that little house. We never used those services because she died before that got off the ground. But I could teach those girls about what it's like to have a handicapped child and one with special needs and medically fragile and how hard that is. And, you know, because it's so hard, they need encouraging. These families are tired. And so we would talk about what are some things you could say in those cards? What are some scriptures that would really help make them feel better? And so every holiday that year, we would make cards. And, like, since there were kids involved, we'd make little Easter baskets. And so the purpose of that was I wanted them to see you are a minister now. You don't have to wait till you're older. You're now. And now you're ministering, and you can minister to people of all ages. They can be old, they can be young, it doesn't matter. You are important, and you are valid, and you have something to share, and you need to share your Jesus. And this is how you can do this. And so, not just Bible lessons, but this is important to incorporate in your time there, too. And then, the last thing we did, I know you both remember those, the parent dinner. I just thought this would be an important thing to do, and it became so important when I watched what it did for these girls and for us. We did a dinner at the end of the year. Each year, about that time, we think, we have to gear up for this. Because it was a lot of work, but it was so worth it. We met every Sunday for about 7 or 8 Sundays for about 2 hours. And the girls would plan a dinner for their parents. They were in charge of the entire thing. Go to the next one. This is what, that's the important one. Well, we'll do that first and then I'll explain what they had to do. The reason we did the dinner was we wanted them to develop their friendships even further. We're starting right after Christmas, so they've already had half a year together, but you'd think they would know each other, but they're still friends they didn't know. They didn't go to the same schools. And so a lot of them would say, wow, I never knew Emily was so much fun, you know, but she got put in a group with her and then they became friends. And so that was really, really important. We developed friendships with the girls. I think it went backwards there. Just being with them, wow. I mean, the mentoring that happened for us, it was
powerful. Well, and during that time, you got to kind of see their personalities and the ones who had a great sense of humor or, I mean, it was, that was fun.
And we would always tell them, learn how to work together was a big one. You will cry. Somebody's going to cry this year. It may be you, it may not be you. It will either be for a really positive thing or a negative thing. It's going to happen. Just know this up front because we're going to learn how to work together. And it was kind of majority rule on what we decided to do. We never knew when we went in what that dinner was going to look like, what the theme was going to be. It was different every year. The girls picked it all. They did all of that. It gave them so much confidence. They would think that they couldn't do it. And that's partly some of the tears were that. Like, this is not going to come together. And then they would see it come together, and they were shocked at how it worked. And I said to the girls, I would always say, you know what? Your parents love you, so no matter what you do, they're going to love it. So don't worry. They're going to love it. And they always did. And then it gave them the opportunity to give back to their parents, to thank them for all the things they had done. So go to the next one. This was their responsibilities. They had to come up with a theme, and then their theme had to connect with God. That was challenging. Some of our themes were 50s and today. We had Under the Sea, Candyland. Tell them Candyland. What was it they did to connect with God?
Well, for their skits, they were all dressed in all the Candyland characters, which was hysterical. But they were using the Candyland board as a journey to God. Like, this is, how, you know. So it was pretty funny.
It was funny. And you have to, like, let go of thinking you know how this should go. You are not in charge.
Well, and we would always tell the parents before the skits.
Yeah, we did.
We didn't write these skits. We're not, they don't always have like a very clear meaning behind them, and you may not catch what this skit is about, but just watch and applaud at the end.
While they were getting in their costumes, we would give the disclaimers. But then we explained why it was so powerful and why it was so important that so many friendships and relationships were gained. And so it was valid for whatever they did. It was okay. And their skits, we divided them into groups again. Again, we did not let them pick. We prayed and prayed and prayed over this all the time that, you know, somehow they would pick that number that needed to go with that. That girl got with whomever she was supposed to get with. And sometimes it meant they were going to have conflict, but that was what was needed. That those two needed to work it out, and they were going to work it out at that dinner through all that. We did a dance as a whole group because that, again, allowed them to be together as a whole group thing, to work together, not just in their little small groups. And we'd always end with songs, like two or three songs that were church songs to try to pull it back to God again. They cooked all the food, and then they served their parents. I veered away from the cook menu 1 year and swore I would never do that again. It was the year that somebody had picked a 50s theme, and Vicki Dell was my teacher, is since Thursday, and she was pregnant and she went into labor early, and so I was on my own with these girls, and we were having hamburgers and french fries, which for about 50 people is not easy to pull off. So after that, I was like, this is the menu. And they said, what do you want? No, this is the menu. And we just did easy things. It looked great. It was more important to know that these girls did it. We were facilitators. We were not teachers. And really, even in Bible class, it's kind of like that, too. But can you think, if you were going to do your closing things, so do that.
Okay. There was a lot that happened with that. We're out of time, so.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of reasons why we do this. And I'm going to read this one thing to you that I read. The people who are teaching the sixth grade girls now are awesome, and they kind of have the same feel for it that we did. And one of those people posted this on Facebook, and I just want to read it to you because I think it fits sixth grade girls. I'm not bashing Women's Days or Women's Ministry, I promise, on this. It's not something I love, but I've been to some good ones, so just know that. So this is by Sarah Bessie. Dear Women's Ministry, the world can give me cute cupcake designs and decorating tips, scrapbooking parties, casserole recipes, and other ways to pass the time. But truly, with my respect and love, may I be honest. If I wanted to learn how to decorate cupcakes, I would take a class to learn how to decorate cupcakes. If I wanted to be educated on strategies for decorating my home inexpensively from Winners, I would just, you know, go to Winners or Pinterest. But I'm here with you now because I want what the world cannot give me. We're choking on cutesy things and crafty bits, safe lady topics. And if one more person says that modest is hottest with a straight face, I may throw up. We are hungry for authenticity and vulnerability, not churchified life hacks from lady magazines. Some of us are drowning, suffocating, dying of thirst for want of the cold water of real community. We're trying really hard. After all, we keep showing up to your lady events and we leave feeling just a bit empty. It's just more of the same every time. The women of our world aren't looking for a safe place to cry about housework and ooh and ah over centerpieces. We're not all mothers. Some of us work outside the home. Some of us have kids and others don't or won't or can't. Is womanhood only about wifehood and motherhood? What about those among us that are not wives and mothers? We're not all in the same season of life. We are, or should be, diverse image bearers of the divine God. We need Jesus. We are seeking deep spirituality. We are seeking fellow travelers. We are hungry for true community, a place to tell our stories and listen to another, to love well. But above all, point me to Jesus, not to the sale at the mall. You know what I would have liked instead of decorating tips or a new recipe? I would have liked to pray together. I would have liked the women of the church to share their stories or wisdom with one another. No more celebrity speakers. Please just hand the microphone to that lady over there that brought the apples. I would love to wrestle with some questions that don't have a one-paragraph answer in your study guide. I would like to do a Bible study that does not have pink or flowers on the cover. I would have liked to sign up to bring a meal for our elderly or drop off some clothes for our new baby or be informed about issues in our city where we can make space for God. I would like to organize and prioritize, to rabble-rouse and disturb the peace of the rest of the world on behalf of justice, truth, beauty, and love. I love to hear the prophetic voice of women in our church. Please, may we be the place to detox from the world, its values, its entertainment, its priorities, its focus on appearances and materialism and consumerism. So here is my suggestion. Please stop treating women's ministry or sixth grade girls' ministry like a safe club for little ladies to play church. We are smart. We are brave. We want to change the world. We run marathons to benefit our sisters, not so that we can lose weight. We have more to offer to the church than our mad decorating skills. I look around and I can see that these women can offer strategic leadership, wisdom, counsel, and even, yes, teaching. We want to give and serve and make a difference. We want to be challenged. We want to read books and talk politics, theology, and current events. We want to wrestle through our theology. We want to listen to each other. We want to worship. We want to intercede for our sisters and weep with those who weep, rejoice with those who rejoice, to create life and art and justice with intention. Let's be a community of women gathered together to live more wholeheartedly, to sharpen, challenge, love, and inspire one another to then scatter back out to our worlds, bearing the mandate to be women that love. Ivalette McVicker wrote, "Let us rise to the questions of our time. Let us speak to the injustices of our world. Let us move the mountains of fear and intimidation. Let us shout down the walls that separate and divide. Let us fill the earth with the fragrance of love. Let us be women who love." I'll bring the cupcakes next time, although they likely won't look as cute. That's kind of what I think about when I think about the sixth grade girls, that we didn't want it to be a place where they were still just doing flannel graph little kid stories. We wanted them to wrestle with life and with each other's lives and with each other's stories. And I have to tell one little quick story so you kind of understand where I'm coming from this. I was a counselor for a very long time at a camp in Virginia, at Camp Amaba. And just recently, I had friends come over. They were staying because their daughter was looking at ACU, and she had brought her camp photo album. And in that album was a picture of me as a teenager, as a counselor, and another counselor, and a little girl in between us, Christina Frappuccini. And I loved that little girl. I mean, I'm not going to be able to tell you the story without crying, but I just think you need to hear it. I loved that little girl so much, but I lost touch with her. I didn't know what happened to her. She was my camper for several years in a row, a single mom, had been through some sexual abuse. It was hard, hard stuff. But as soon as I saw that picture, I thought, I've got to find her. So I went on Facebook, and I found her immediately. Like, I just typed in her name, saw her face, and I thought, that is her. So she immediately, I didn't send her a message because it goes to that weird message box on Facebook that nobody ever reads. And so she immediately sent me a message back and she said, "From camp?" And I said, "Yes, from camp." I said, "I always wondered what happened to you." And she said, "Well, it's a really long story, but I'm going to tell you. I'm going to give you the brief version, I promise." She said, "At 15 years old, I had a baby. I ended up addicted to drugs and in jail for most of my life. I'm sober now, and I started going back to church." And I said, "Wow, that's really hard to go back to church where people can be self-righteous or can label you or can point fingers." And she said, "Let me tell you why I went back to church and what sustained me when I was in jail and all through my addiction." And this is totally said humbly. It's not, I'm not bragging about this in any way. I was a teenager, and I had absolutely no idea what I was doing when I was her counselor. She said, "I thought about you, and I thought Julie loved me, and Julie thought I was okay. That there's got to be more people out there who are like that, and there have to be more safe places out there like Camp Lava." So she's now going to church. She's on her fourth marriage, but it's a really good guy. She's sober. She's been sober for a few years now, and now we're reconnected. Like, that one little time in her life, like this, you spend a year with sixth grade girls. If you can say some encouraging words in the midst of that, you can make a difference. I'm going to pray a verse before we go. Holy Father, thank you so much for your grace and your mercy, that you use our humanness every single day to change people's lives because of who you are and not because of who we are. I pray for sixth grade girls all over this world, that they feel their worth, that they feel who they are in you, that they know what their gifts are, that they know their place. And I pray that they are comfortable in their own skins because people have walked them to that place. Thank you so much that you walk with us. I pray this in your Son's name. Amen.
Thank you.